committee to order. I'm sure everybody has a chance to take a look at the minutes.
Make a motion, we approve the minutes as submitted.
Okay, motion made by Legislator Nolan to accept the minutes as written. Second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Legislator Litz. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. All right, what we're going to do first tonight, we've got some people here throughout the county with different jobs that they do and resolutions that we have to go over. So what we're going to do first, we have Chris Newman from the college who has two resolutions, Resolution 260 and Resolution 261. We'll do those first, take them out of order, so he doesn't have to be here for 17 more. Chris, you want to speak on anything here?
Sure. So Resolution 260 is the roof renovation for our borough's building.
Right.
The roof over that section of the building that has, is old and it's leaking for several years, and we have an opportunity to refurbish that. And so that's what this resolution is for.
Okay.
It's $460,000.
Right.
For the
project. So, any questions on that that you'd like more details on? Yes. you know, one of the things I ask fairly regularly when I see a roof replacement is there's two things that come to my mind. One is an opportunity to super insulate that portion, and the other is to do an evaluation of the structural integrity for the potential for solar, whether solar is going to be put in or not. And we're actually having a meeting so that the legislature or this committee can better understand what the process for all of that is. But since this is specifically that kind of project, can you help me understand what thought went into or language in an RFP or with regard to, you know, there's certain things that kind of are a red flag for me, pay attention to this. So I just wonder, and I'm not, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but this is a conversation that we've been coming to for a while.
The roof over that particular building is one of the more energy efficient ones. It's sort of a white roof with just a glass material. So we intend to keep it similar to that. In terms of the solar panel, a few years ago we had a company come in and originally they had proposed putting solar panels on top of the roof all around campus. Unfortunately, the roof conditions were such poor conditions that we just couldn't support that. So with the roof replacement, that is one of the long-term goals, is for a future expansion of the solar farm that is slated to go onto our campus property, is if we ever expand beyond the ground version, would replace with a newer roof, we would have the capacity to absorb the expansion.
So that is built into this, that...
The way that the roof, in terms of the anchoring and pre... station it now, but in terms of the integrity of the roof, it should be stable enough to adjust and to accommodate future expansion of solar panels, solar anchor.
And so, if I could just one thing. So, what Chris was talking about is we are working with Tesla on two projects. One, the one that we just opened up on the landfill. The other is Studio Ulster. And right now, as Chris said, at one point we were planning on putting a lot of the array up on the rooftop in a small grounds, but because of the condition of the roofs, many of them needing to be replaced in the near future, they decided to put them all kind of behind where the master's garden is right now.
Mm-hmm.
It can be extended. These are all behind the meter, which is nice. So, you know, this is not energy that's going out into the grid for the most part. It's being used right by the campus as opposed to net metering. And so it will be possible to extend that system down the road. This also
This is just the roof over the current lecture hall, which is starting at 120. So this is going to be a smaller component of the roof. you're going to see a larger roof replacement program in the upcoming capital for SUNY Ulster. That's going to be the larger scope, which will include the rest of boroughs. So certainly, this is just right now addressing the roof over the Western Hall, which is part of the work that's being done in boroughs. But as they go forward to do more work on the roofs, this is just that kind of smaller component right now. And it's actually a raised roof, so it's a separate section of roof, and it does have a smaller footprint.
Okay.
I don't want you to think of it as a huge roof structure.
My other question, though, is... at the family court, the roof had the integrity, the new family court, but the issue was the supporting structure would have had to be changed out. So it just always seems to me that when a building is open, that's the time to be assessing that and considering it rather than, ruling it out. So, that's my question. Is for this section, is there any concern about the supporting structure?
Whether it's a seal? The assessor was done originally to advocate for that. What Jamie brought up a good point. What the roof that we're talking about is a raised section, so it's a very small footprint compared to all of the borough buildings. So definitely for the whole borough. So think of it as a small footprint, it's just one long stretch further for the rest.
Okay.
That's a bigger roof project that we're contemplating for next year's capital.
Okay.
That's the more comprehensive one. This one is, we're taking advantage of the fact that we're renovating one classroom, essentially, has a roof right above that classroom that we're going to fix at the same time.
We're only funding a portion of the contract, so
yeah.
We also have, a state partner that has to agree with us on whether we're willing to take extra cost to look at some of that.
And I just want to say that's really clear in, the old resolution from 2006, that if there is another funder, that before you take on extra cost, it would have to be by mutual agreement. But it also says that to report to this department, and this is a little bit different, but and that's really what I'm trying to get at, is that let us know. I mean, your explanation made very good sense as far as I'm concerned, but I feel like I have to be the squeaky wheel to find out, and I'm just asking that you folks be more proactive in letting us know. Now, this doesn't exactly cover that situation, but it's because that's talking about LEED and NYSERDA, but it is the general area of, please let us know exactly what you just said as part of the report, because, yes, we care.
So I'll take the resolution. Resolution number 260, approving a work order with the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York for construction management services related to the roof replacement portion of capital project number 524, Burroughs Renovation, SUNY Ulster. Motion made by Legislator Litch, seconded by Legislator Green. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Resolution number 261, establishing capital project number 527, SUNY Ulster Classroom Renovations, amending the 2018 to 2023 Capital Improvement Program, amending the 2018 Capital Fund Budget. SUNY Ulster, this is to renovate how many classrooms?
Several classrooms. We have a list of high needs all around campus. And the classroom renovations really encompasses not only furniture, desks and chairs, but old and dilapidated steam tiles, potentially some equipment for the classroom. So we have a new
academic programs and initiatives online, more collaborations with math, the tutorial, teaching, for example. It requires a different mode of delivery, more collaboration, tables. So the classroom furniture money for the classrooms and upgrades will really be useful to tailor our educational delivery to the needs of the students. See this spread all over campus. If you've been on any of our classrooms, you'll see that the class furniture has been rather dated 40 plus years.
Wow.
The ceilings are rotten.
Feels right at home to me.
So this project will be very timely just to get us to begin to modernize our facilities on the interior side.
I'll
move it.
Okay, motion made by Legislator Litz.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, motion carried.
Sure, go ahead.
Bartle, yeah, just so you guys are you're all aware, purchasing department in City Austin right now is working on an RFP for Architectural and Engineering Services. Basically creating a list that will be a 5-year list of qualified architects and engineers. I think we got
18, 19.
But one of the things that we will look at is make sure that somebody on the list has experience in sustainability, sustainable building practices, et cetera, so that, you know, as we're working on these projects and moving them through, that's something that
and you're going to see kind of a lot of these different kind of phases. Like Chris mentioned, a lot of the furniture on campus, this is kind of phase one right now. We're going to continue kind of that progress going forward to really make sure that the campus is up to par and really meets all the needs. So this will be you'll start seeing them coming through the phases. So if you have questions like what was done previously, what's the difference between this and what you've seen previously, certainly we can address those questions. So these kind of phased approach to get.
And does this fall under any of the procurement policies in terms of, you know, locally sourced or not using endangered hardwoods and stuff like that? How does that...
Wardens of plastic?
But how does... especially, this is it's going to include the furniture group. And by the way, I just, for the record, asked the last time this came up, because it's my community, and members of the community were concerned that it was leading toward dormitories, and it's clearly renovating what is existing. But
the authority that's used, that we're using for a lot of this work, for providing the services to students.
Oh, that's why people get concerned.
Yeah.
They provide the services, the project management services, to all the 4 years, and they provide it in the city system.
Yep.
They
provide
it to some of the students.
And they provide it at no cost for interior designing and procurement for the furniture. So then they follow all the state procurements under that.
Chris, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to leave resolutions for a minute, and I'm going to ask Emmanuel Dallas here from the Department of Environment to bring us up to speed a little bit of what's going on around the county now and in the future as far as anything with solar or energy efficiency on our buildings that are being remodeled and that. Amanda,
can I ask you to come closer? Just right
here. Consider yourself invited.
Just so I understand it, kind of is
Legislator Green and Legislator Nolan had wanted some input on Legislator Green, who was not here to speak.
Energy saving stuff, saving natural stuff, taking on consideration for the tariff and replacing all county buildings.
Saving steps.
in like an action plan.
So we're constantly interacting, environment and purchasing environment and public works, executive's office on many different levels and many different projects. So just wanted to take an opportunity almost to take a step back to kind of, before, you know, you get things often at the kind of project level, the contract level, but just to give you some perspective in how this thinking is embedded, really, in some of our conversations and how we're going about looking at projects. I wanted to share with you, I don't know if you've seen this document, read along. This was the New York State DEC Environmental Excellence Award that the county received back in November of 2017. This was the documentation that we provided in support of that application. And the reason why we wanted to share this, because I think this is the best thing on paper that provides some context for how we're thinking about things. Because whenever people want to kind of see the renewable projects and talk about solar and talk about renewable energy, you know, and you all know this, the hard steps to take first that aren't nearly as compelling or as spicy a story are the conservation and efficiency measures. Mm-hmm. So in this application where we talk really broadly about what the county is doing across departments as far as supporting environmental initiatives, I think on page, they're not numbered, but it's page 3, we start to talk about the strategy for basically carbon emissions reductions, energy use reductions, and how our various RECs and carbon neutral initiative fits into the bigger picture here. On the bottom half of page 3, and the two graphics on page 3 really are just talking about the first step always is avoiding and reducing emissions, then energy efficiency, technology deployment, then on-site renewables, and then thinking about, you know, offsets like RECs and carbon credits. And then there's the continuous monitoring and benchmarking that we do throughout the process. I think it's important right now, as a good example, and this was a contract that was approved the other month, was the county is a clean energy community in New York State. We received a $250,000 grant from NYSERDA as that prize. We chose to focus on the law enforcement center. And what we're moving ahead with is a really extensive lighting retrofit, which at $200,000 about of cost, which again is totally funded by the grant, is anticipated to save 750,000 kilowatt hours of electricity a year. That, you know, back of the envelope calculations is what a renewable project on the whole entire roof at the jail might produce. So, although not as showy, if you do it well, you actually don't see much of a difference. If anything, your lighting quality improves. But it's really important to reducing the footprint of the energy use before we get into things like renewables. So, really, the main thought here in sharing this is that puts a lot of that thinking to paper. So we're it's always thought of, but we're always looking for those first steps, which are really the logical conservation and efficiency projects before we get to renewables. And to this point in time, renewable at a larger scale, like the landfill, has been much more doable, implementable, cost-effective for us than spending the time, doing rooftop installations like on something like this building, where the footprint is relatively small compared to the usage of the building, and also compared to what an efficiency project like lighting would do here. So we never want to do things that preclude that in the future. You know, and I think that's a really good point about if you have a building roof opened up, you know, are there things that we can do that are practicable at that point in time that would allow that in the future? Absolutely. But there's still a lot of work to do kind of on the efficiency and conservation side. So that's kind of...
And if I could also just interject, one of the things I want to do in the future is when we go out an RFP for an architect engineering services for a roof, include at least the cost of doing a cost benefit analysis on those rooftops. I know UCLAC is the next. You know, we may not do that cost benefit analysis, but at least get
the cost for it.
Get a cost for it and determine whether it makes sense, and we can also determine whether, you know, it's feasible to do the solar on that rooftop. I know UCLAC's one of the next roofs coming up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's one that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of on the long term.
Yep. It is it's a challenging roof in that.
Right.
Which one is coming up?
Law enforcement. And it's not coming up, but it's kind of the next one that is going to be looked at. You know, we just, last month, you approved this DPW roof, which I know is one of the things that sparked this conversation.
I think you've addressed a lot of the issues and also provided a nice context for why it can be hard to see what has been done. You talked about those discussions being embedded in very early planning. I like the idea of having a standard policy of asking for the cost-benefit analysis, and I wondered if it would be possible to consider building in as a standard some kind of points for innovative energy reduction, green innovation. That way you would have the engineering firms, you know, kind of putting on their hats and putting it into the documents. And even if we didn't use it on that project, we might have an idea that that's out there for another project. And it seems worthy of giving some points for that. So if there's a way to do that that's acceptable with the other things you need to do in the bidding process,
then
if they put it in, it will then be in the contract, and we'll see it when it comes to this committee.
Just so I can bring up just a quick point of clarification, we're not able to do something like that in the bidding process. So once we get towards like construction, in the RFP process, it seems like a small distinction, right? But it really is. There's a lot that we can do in the RFP process that we can't do in a one of, you know, general municipal law, 103 competitive field bid. So it is something that you know, ends writing this down as we speak, and we can look at to see where those points can fit in.
It's a good correction, and I accept it because part of what our discomfort has been is if we think of something once it just comes to us, it's already too far along in the process, and so we want to be helpful, but at this point, so that's the reason for this discussion, is to try to put it in as early on in the process as possible, but in a way that we can see it.
Example of how we're doing this kind of planning, we have an RFP out right now, a request for proposal for a nice sort of flex tech study. So we've worked with DPW, who needs to do some heating, the HVAC master capital project, kind of teased off two of the higher priority buildings, which are UCLEC and the county office building. And what we've done is worked kind of hand in glove with them to do this as a nice sort of flex tech study, which then becomes more of an energy master plan. So that we're evaluating different technologies, renewable technology, and to meet hopefully both the immediate need for HVAC and then also have a plan that maybe is, you know, like a 10-year or 15-year implementation for something like the jail. So it's been a really good, we're hoping this is a model for us kind of going forward, and I think that's kind of what I'm excited about it. I think it's going to put some options on the table that aren't hopefully
While we're on this topic, I just have a couple more little things. One is for new construction, it says, which we do very little of, but that if possible, and again, the funding distinction, but that it would be LEED Silver is, and
this is from Resolution 383 from 2006.
At my time here, we have done a new construction. So the last new construction project we've done is
was
right.
So I mean,
yeah, goes back a ways.
Goes back a ways.
But above that it says for any county funded construction projects, including major renovations, that the county would meet with NYSERDA to inform them, and then would request a NYSERDA audit. Now, this is definitely, the flex check is definitely...
That's
this.
More than an audit.
Yeah.
And also, that resolution was written around the time where we were doing some, I think, what would be considered ASHRAE Level 1 audits of certain buildings. The 2010 energy audit that was done for county facilities was actually ASHRAE Level 3.
Okay.
So that's considered an investment grade audit.
And that was for all buildings?
Yes.
Okay.
So going forward, something like this kind of energy master plan, flex tech study, that is beyond an audit.
We are in the early stages of looking at some of the DPW substation well and see what we can do down the road. So, again, very early stages, but see that there's some energy efficiency there that we can find.
I have a little last question, and this is extremely helpful just to understand how the system works. But this is a very helpful document. I may have had it before and not paid as careful attention, but the green stormwater, that is probably, the committee will attest that, I'm not nearly as knowledgeable about roads as I don't consider myself an expert at buildings, but I understand a little bit about building science, but not so much roads. Opportunities for green stormwater infrastructure. I know that with the STRIVE project and with the SUNY Ulster Kingston Center, from the conferences I've been to and whatever indicate that there are really good opportunities where using pervious paving could actually improve safety on hills and curves because the ice breaks up better. And I just want to be sure that we're sort of not stuck in doing things the way we've always done them, if there are opportunities, either improve health and safety or improve our ability to recharge groundwater. So what's going on with that? If we could just get clarity on it.
And I think that from what I know of pervious pavement, and we did, because we used it at STRIVE, that was something that we worked through with the engineers. First of all, it's been very limited in its application in kind of highway traffic situations. There's a stretch of about a mile in Lake George around Million Dollar Beach because of water quality impacts there where they did travel lanes with pervious pavement. I'm not sure if it's been further deployed beyond that. And there are issues with heavier vehicles and heavier traffic on pervious pavement that can make it more challenging, especially for high traffic areas and for highway vehicles. So it's a concern. Because you're trying to create a reservoir, a void in that lower substrate, in that gravel layer, you can't load it, you don't roll it, right? So you don't compact it. So you're concerned about heavier weight vehicles over time compacting the substrate. So that's an issue, and I know the Million Dollar Beach section was highly engineered. And that was a big deal that was done with pervious pigment. And it was in an area with really very sensitive water quality issues.
Mm-hmm.
In general, for parking lots, let's take this parking lot here for an example. It was recently repaved, right? A pervious pavement application here requires not just a top coat, it requires that reservoir substrate.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just repaving the top. You're actually creating usually 36 inches of gravel below it. So this is a whole different scale of project. Right. Yeah. And the other thing is, okay, what's the value of that? Well, the value of the pervious pavement, there are some almost co-benefits of, there's not black ice, it's some places easier to maintain, things like that. But in general, you know, the big benefit is we're getting it into the nearest surface groundwater aquifer, and it's not going into the stormwater system. The lot back here actually has catch basins. Mm-hmm. Uptown Kingston has 80 feet of sand out here. I don't know that personally, but that's what I've been told from the well logs. So the catch basins that aren't connected to a stormwater drainage system that are just, you know, letting it go back into the sand, the naturally occurring sand there, at the end of the day, that's doing the same thing as pervious pavement. So is it worth the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of extra cost to do the full reconstruction with the big gravel reservoir to get the benefits of maybe it being, you know, not as much ice and snow accumulation? You know, probably not there. So it's important to consider the site and kind of what those benefits are, and in addition to what the co-benefits of like a pervious pavement is.
I know the issue with the UCAP parking lot, which is being done with the environmental manager earlier, was that it has the walk-through, but frequently travel on it.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
It just didn't make sense, and I also believe that it doesn't feed into the stormwater system.
Right, it's kind of perched. And then if you're on rock, then you're talking about excavating rock so that you can get the reservoir depth, which is like...
Sure, you look at it, it's something to consider.
Yeah.
But I would step back again, because I think in each specific case, you're going to have to consider
right.
all those factors. One of the questions I had when thinking about this, and maybe we need Tom Jackson here as well for this discussion, is whether or not there are best practices that are developing in stormwater management that would do for roadways what you're describing has been done for the department's building over here, which is have the catch basements, and maybe Herb knows about this, whether or not even in some of the, whether or not these are best,
research.
And it, again, is there something in our request for proposals or our standard operating procedures in which we are incorporating those state-of-the-art management practices that are the most cost-effective as well?
I mean, you could easily create an RFP and write for an engineering firm that they need to look at that as a possible alternative.
I mean, I think the tricky part is, if you're talking about like, how the roadways, et cetera, is that some of that is state of the art. Now, this was state of the art back in whenever it was done, when I think you
but it comes up well. We want to bump state of the art.
When this was added, but it does, as Amanda said earlier, you have to go down that extra level. A lot of the roads that we're paving on the top layer. To install something like a recharge base, then I think you have to go much deeper.
But this is where you're connecting to an engineered
stormwater system.
This is not a
No, we can.
This has been around 30 years.
Yeah.
Right.
They did the outer loop on the state office building, the Harriman's complex.
Mm-hmm.
We did a section down in Binghamton on the hill, God bless you, that was subject to a lot of icing.
Yeah.
Didn't hold up. It doesn't hold up well in the traffic.
Right.
It does well in parking lots, in the rain applications.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting, like, the city of Kingston used the DEC funding to do a green infrastructure, green stormwater retrofit of the two parking lots off of North Front Street. And instead of doing permeable pavement as a treatment for the whole lot, they did basically big dry wells and then bioretention, you know, in the little places where they could squeeze it in. So, again, they were worried about the wear and tear, the weight.
It's a hybrid system.
Yeah. Right. So. Yeah.
Okay. And any more questions for Amanda?
Just a point that, you know, the county didn't have, as far as I know, anything to do with it, but I look at that parking lot over by the throughway circle and think that was a new project, and you know, it's after the fact and everything, but I just wonder if they even considered it. And yet it is the state that's promoting so much of this. So, but I really appreciate the conversation.
They did utilize some.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just perfect.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Around the perimeter by the soil.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it doesn't go into a closed drainage system there.
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. Okay.
Okay. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for coming and making that presentation and answering some of our questions. We appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Okay, now we have Don Fresnel here. Don, you're the new
Deputy Commissioner of DPW.
Okay. And you're here to discuss the late resolution that will be going for laws and rules about the Esoteric and Cross Valley.
And first of all, our apologies, we couldn't do that any sooner.
That's okay.
There was an easement that had to be done, and at the time there was no verbal agreement for it, that resolution deadline.
Okay.
So now we do have a verbal agreement for it, so we got it to as quickly as we could. Problem is, if we wait until next month, we have to be out of the water by September 30th.
Right.
So if we don't get out of the water, we have to demobilize the agency, the contractor crews, and then remobilize them again in the spring. It'll be much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think laws and rules, they meet tomorrow night?
No.
Day before.
Yeah.
Day before, so it will be good then. It should be fine.
Okay.
All righty. And if you want to leave there, you don't have to stay. Okay. Anybody have any questions for Tom before we go back to resolutions?
Nope. Appreciate the heads up.
Sure. Okay. Resolution 264, Capital Project 501, Chattanooga Lake Road Site Distance Improvement Review and Approval of the Environmental Review under the State Environmental Review Act of CEPRA, Classification of Project as an Unlisted Action and Approval of Negative Declaration.
I'll move it on. Netting, including as a sponsor.
And I'll second it, but I would appreciate the discussion of why it's an unlisted action and then the neg deck.
All right, so we got a motion made by Legislator Litz, seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Well, she wanted discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
It was originally a realignment project, which fits into the county site 2. So it would require
no further review
under CEPRA. The project was rescoped to include the acquisition and demolition of the house that is physically...
This is the one I asked to be added to realign the roads to take care of a safety issue.
Right.
In the meantime, the house went up for taxes, the county took over the ownership. So rather than realign the road, we'll take down the house. Now you have the site distance, and you don't need to realign the road.
But because it involves the demolition of the building, it had to be an unrelated action. Could you add me as a sponsor as well? It's a great project. And it is so wonderful that somebody
in the other
did have their synapses clicking as the building went up for sale. It's great.
All right, so I believe we had a motion by Legislator Litt, seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Resolution number 234.
That may be our favorite resolution of last year, before I was a legislator. And so now it can be my favorite resolution of this year so far. It's saving the county a lot of money and making a big improvement there. So that's great.
Resolution number 234, approving the execution of a contract amendment causing aggregate amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into the Red Wolf Fire and Security LLC Department of Public Works. This is for fire inspections of safety equipment inspections at the law enforcement center. Appropriated money.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Legislator Litt, seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Resolution number 235, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into the County Bergman Associates Department of Public Works. This is for design of right-of-way services for a Horston Road project between New York State Route 32 and Thruway Bridge in the town of New Paltz.
I'll move it. I'll second.
Motion made by Kathy Nolan, seconded by Legislator Green. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Resolution number 236, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Hubble Incorporated Department of Public Works. And this is for stabilization of the stream banks and roadway embankment along Bushkill Creek and Watson Hollow Road in the town of Olive.
I'll move it.
Second.
Motion made by Legislator Nolan, seconded by Legislator Litt. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Resolution number 237, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into the County Pestmaster Services Department of Public Works. This is the 2018 Integrated Pest Management Services for various county buildings, 100% county, 2018, 2019, 2020.
$61,683
appropriated money.
Yeah, I just have a quick question because I was reviewing, the whole packet, and this is an example of pesticide management, and we have a policy, and I'm assuming that there's consistency, but yes, it's okay.
This the resolution for pesticides is included in the packet as part of the reference to this contract.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll move this.
Second.
Second. So, Chairman Cagliano moved it. Legislator Nolan seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Resolution number 238, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county Barton and
Lejeunesse.
Lejeunesse, thank you. Barton Public, DPC, Barton Public Works.
I'll move it.
Okay. Motion made by Legislator Nolan.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Green. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Resolution number 239, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Town and Country Bridge and Rail Incorporated, Department of Public Works, replacement of a roadway signage at various locations throughout the county.
I'll move it.
All right. Motion made by Legislator Nolan, seconded by Legislator Litz. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. That would be a private company coming in and do that, right? Resolution number 243, authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the state, with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Office of Interoperable and Emergency Communications for the 2017 Statewide Interoperable Communications Grant. Amending Capital Project 482, amending the 2018 Capital Fund Budget, Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management.
So moved.
Motion second. Made by Legislator Litz. Do you want to speak on it?
I don't need to.
Okay. Motion made by Legislator Litz, seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
I don't, but I expect that there will be on that one because of the price.
It's changing all sorts of grants. What it's doing is the grant is to help us change the police emergency department county by modernizing the police.
So they can talk to each other.
They can talk to each other.
Yeah. Has nothing to do with the fire service or strictly police.
It's strictly emergency management services.
Okay.
Emergency management.
So that's the sheriff's department.
Sheriff's department.
I hope they all get one.
Yeah. And this is additional grant money coming in as we apply to existing capital projects to do infrastructure improvements to those
Thank you. Resolution number 263, authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC, to accept grant funds under the 2017 Municipal Zero Emission Vehicle, ZEV, and ZEV Infrastructure Rebate Program, amending the 2018 Ulster County Budget, Department of Public Works.
I would like to move this.
I'm just going to say it. Motion made by Legislator Green.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution number 266, authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with the County Board of Cooperative Educational Services, BOCES, for classroom space at 521 Voices Lane, Ulster County Public Works, Buildings and Grounds.
So moved.
All right, this is for a 5-year lease.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sublease. Sublease. OET leases that property. BOCES would like to sublease the classroom space that's available. Motion made by Legislator Litz, seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. resolution number 267, amending capital project number 504, Frost Valley Road S-turn reconstruction project, authorizing the chairman of the legislature to execute an agreement for the grant proceeds on behalf of Ulster County, amending the 2018 capital fund budget, Department of Public Works, Highways and Bridges. Motion made by Legislator Nolan. Seconded by Legislator Green. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
This is
the bond, right? This is the authorized entrance to the grant. Okay. Resolution number 269, amending capital project number 507, Origin Pavement Overlay in the town of New Falls, pin 8761.93, transportation improvement project tip, not on the state highway system, amending the 2018-2023 capital improvement plan, Department of Public Works, Highway and Bridges.
So moved.
Motion made by Legislator Lipp, seconded by Legislator Green. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Then our final resolution, this is the year's catalog. Resolution number 271, amending capital project number 511, Watson Hollow Slope Stabilization, amending the 2018-2023 Ulster County Capital Improvement Department of Public Works, Highway and Bridges.
So moved.
Motion made by Legislator Litt. Seconded by Legislator Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Do we have any old business? Do we have any new business?
Just, if I may, call folks' attention. Last month we talked about a training for volunteers, and we had 45 volunteers turn out to help with the Climate Smart Committee and in cooperation with the Office of Economic Development and the Department of Environment are sponsoring a launch of the Green Business Challenge on Wednesday morning, June 27. We have some really excellent case studies of people that sort of quiet businesses that quietly on their own have done really amazing work to implement climate change solutions, and they're going to be telling their own stories as case studies. And then there will be a vendor show with people that provide services or products that relate to climate, I don't like using the word mitigation, climate solutions. And then there'll be roundtables where experts will be available and people can ask them questions, kind of like speed dating, where they can go to the areas that they're most interested in learning more about, whether it's EVs and charging stations or photovoltaics or energy retrofits or composting we're including. And I want to really acknowledge Melinda Herzog from Cornell Cooperative Extension did a lot of research to pull that information together for restaurants and large food waste generators. So, which, you know, I noticed that some of those things were listed in the document that Amanda shared, and so we're helping not just the county to implement, but now going out to the businesses, and the volunteers were really engaged, the experts were excellent, and the only comments were, we wish we had more time, so we're going to have follow-up series focusing just a whole evening on each of the topics. And we hope to have another training in September
so that maybe by the end of the year we really will have 100 business funds engaged with 45 volunteers working on this and a team of more than a dozen sort of experts or people that were at least willing to do research and pull information together. So it's going very well, and I really also want to acknowledge the cooperation between the legislature and the executive branch on this. I'm very pleased about that, I think it's because it is so important. We're in the middle of a climate crisis that is manifesting in so many different ways that everything we can do now is going to make it better for the future. So please come out. It's going to be really interesting. Everyone who was at the training, we really had great feedback. And we set aside about 20 minutes. We had people kind of work in small groups with the information we had handed to them. And then they came back and gave us good ideas about how this program can work better moving forward. One of them was to encourage businesses to take a small step, you know, not necessarily, and once you get somebody to say yes and engage, they're more likely to take a larger step. We're documenting everything because if this works as well as we hope it will, at the end of the year we'll have data on how much greenhouse gases were avoided or maybe in some cases even sequestered. I'm hoping this will be worthy of the New York Times or another National Geographic. But anyway, it's going well, and we only have room for 70 people at the launch, so if you're hoping to go, please go ahead and register.
Mark, you had something? Yeah, just to kind of take a lot of these relayed appreciation for the legislative green and this committee and the legislature and the partnership and the innovation of this the green business project, and also that we there's another business, the Reese Group, actually, just a solar array on the building. So we're adding businesses every day.
And I think that we're going to consider them the number one business in the green business. Yeah. And there was one other thing. I was at the Highland Rotary this morning, and there were 40 people or so in the room. And I did a quick announcement, and they invited me to come back because they meet every Wednesday, and a couple people are going to just come to the launch. But they invited me to come back and do a whole presentation to the Rotary. So the Rotaries are getting involved, and they're all networked, and the chambers and the business associations. So,
Mark, I just want to thank you and all your staff for coming, and Amanda. You know, it makes our job as legislators so much easier when we get staff from the executive office at our meetings. Because if we have questions about certain resolutions and things that are coming down our road, we don't have to sit here and guess. We don't have to delay things.
Yeah.
It's a whole smoother process.
No postponements.
Postponements. I just wanted to throw it out. So tonight, having you people here tonight was a blessing and a major help. We had a lot of work to do tonight. It's not even an hour meeting, but we had our questions answered. And I just wish that, you know, that's the way it should all be. Thank you all for coming.
I appreciate it.
You had told me that. Thank you.
For a model committee.
Very well.
No move.
All right. Motion made by Legislator Linton, seconded by Legislator Nolan to adjourn. This meeting is adjourned.
I think we also had a talk with Rick Remschneider and have him present to the...